Welcome to the Rooney Report. Today we have with us Alexandra Snyder, Executive Director of Life Legal Defense Foundation. Alexandra, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Russ.
So Alexandra, if you could just start out and tell us just a brief history about Life Legal Defense Foundation.
So Life Legal Defense Foundation is a nonprofit pro bono law firm. And we have been in existence now for over 30 years. We started in response to quite a bit of harassment that was happening at abortion clinics, so at with pro-life activities outside of abortion clinics, to be more specific. And these pro-lifers were getting arrested. Again, they were being threatened, harassed, and there was really nobody at that time who would defend them, who would represent them. So our organization was started by a gentleman who was not a lawyer. He's an activist and is still now in his 80s, still an activist.
Great.
And he found a group of lawyers who would work with him and start representing defendants in these cases, pro-life defendants. And we have grown since then.
Mm-hmm. You've grown nationally, right? So you're in...
Yes.
Have you had cases in every state yet, or quite a few, I know?
You know, we've done case maps before. We generally do them by year, so, and I think we've been in almost every state. We've been literally from Maine to Hawaii, and I would think in just about every state in between.
Yeah. Well, there's been a lot of big cases recently, and what I think is so interesting is I spoke to someone talking about the David Dalyden case. And this person said, well, I don't know if it's really true because, you know, the person didn't see it on the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. I said, well, you're not going to see it on mainstream media. But I said, it is true. And if you go to the court documents, it's all there. So let's, you know, talk about that and give us a little background that happened in California, which is where you're based out of.
Yes. So that was a case involving, as you said, David Dalyden and an organization that he founded called the Center for Medical Progress. And they, with the help of some other individuals like Sandra Merritt, who was instrumental in getting these videos out, they went undercover and went to abortion conferences where they talk about how to do abortions, how to kill more babies more quickly. And they went to these conferences and got video footage of Planned Parenthood representatives and other abortionists talking about how they sell or would intend or would want to sell the body parts of aborted babies. I mean, it's just gruesome to think about, the body parts of aborted babies for a profit. And the videos did make it to the mainstream media initially, and then Planned Parenthood really pushed back, and I think they spent over $30 million that year on PR alone to refurbish their image. I mean, the videos had an impact, and if you've seen any of them, I mean, you've got to realize this, we cannot allow this to happen.
And disturbingly, talking about how the baby is crushed to save certain body parts.
Yes. I mean, just the process by which that's done. I mean, and a lot of what they discussed, too, involved changing the abortion procedure in order to procure intact parts, so primarily intact skulls, which are very valuable for those people
research
who traffic in that abhorrent business. But yeah, so, and that is illegal. That is a violation of federal law to change the abortion procedure in order to procure those parts. And yet those things were being discussed openly, how to do that. And even in the trial, more information came out. And again, that's public information about the fact that sometimes labor was induced such that the babies would like almost fall out whole. It's just, it's horrendous.
What's really bizarre, and this person I was talking to, I said, if Dalyden was doing undercover work on animal abuse or almost any other topic, he would have been a hero, right?
Yes. Well, and certainly not be the subject of a criminal prosecution, which he is, as is Sandra Merritt, his colleague in that effort, and then would not have been the subject of three lawsuits, one of which was dropped, but nevertheless, I mean, you're looking at a substantial amount of money damages. Planned Parenthood just came out with their attorney's fees that they want to recover in the double digits. I mean, just, any other, in any other context, this would have, there would be no legal issue here whatsoever.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And when you say double digits, you mean like millions of dollars.
I'm talking like close to $15 million.
To me, it's like perverted justice. I mean, you're going after the person who exposed something horrible. Now here in Minnesota, we experienced, I think, what I would call an injustice. In the early 90s, there was a court case called Doe versus Gomez. And one of our attorneys, it was then called Lawyers for Life, and now Life Legal Minnesota. But he did a lot of research on that case. And as far as he knows, there's nothing in the documents that shows there were any plaintiffs at all. So there's no discovery. So if somebody's watching this and they wonder what discovery is, it's when you interview the plaintiffs to find out what their case is. And in this case, no plaintiffs. It goes to our state Supreme Court, and it totally changed our abortion law so that if someday Roe v. Wade and Doe versus Bolton is overturned, nothing changes in Minnesota.
Yes, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, at this point, you would need a proactive law that was like a trigger law that said, you know, in the event that Roe v. Wade is overturned, we will not pay for abortions. We will, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, as it is with that case, it was outrageous, because if you have no that's the evidence for your case comes through largely through discovery, and mm-hmm. so how you can proceed and run a case like that with really zero evidence because you don't have a plaintiff is beyond me, but it happened.
It did, and Jim documented that one of the so-called plaintiffs, the same day she was giving her testimony is the same day she was having an abortion out east or something. So it's like, you know, bilocational plaintiffs, you know.
Yeah, it was bizarre to say the least.
Yeah.
And lasting, unfortunately.
Yes. And as tragic as that decision is, today, you know, we're taping this in 2020 before the election, so we don't know what's going to happen there. But after Minnesota elected Keith Ellison, who he even said before he elected that, you know, his position was pro-abortion and he would have a tough time defending pro-life laws. And but now that he's our attorney general, there's a group that's trying to literally remove all pro-life laws that had been passed, you know, prior to Roe v. Wade. And some of them are, you know, informed consent, and people who say they're pro-choice don't want to give people choices on information, you know, learning more about what's involved. And we're involved, you're involved,
yes.
Right?
Yes, we are involved, and we hope to be more involved. So, just by way of background, this case involves a pro-LGBTQ group called Gender Justice, and they filed a lawsuit against the state, as you said, challenging virtually every abortion restriction in the state. From informed consent forms, they don't believe women should have to sign forms. I mean, unlike any other medical procedure, I guess, I mean, you can't even get your ears pierced without signing a consent form, but they want to do away with those. They want to do away with the provision that requires abortionists to provide medically accurate information about the baby's age and different information about the baby. They want to do away with laws that, for example, tell women what the obligations of fathers are in cases like this, which would let them know that a father is required to pay child support. So if she has the baby, she will have some support and the state will go after.
Which is support. A pro-woman
It
law,
is.
Right?
It is. Yeah. But it's a very anti-choice. I mean, to do away with it is a very anti-choice way of looking at it.
Yeah.
So these are all what they want to do is facilitate, you know, as many abortions as possible. And the reason they're bringing this lawsuit now is, as you said, because it's very convenient for them that Keith Ellison, who is very, very pro-abortion, mm-hmm. Is now the attorney general. I remember when he was in Congress, I was actually in D.C. working for a member of Congress at that time, and just thought, wow, he was one of the most radical then, and I think he's even more radical now. I mean, fully supported. He has 100% rating from Planned Parenthood, from NARAL, from all of the pro-abortion groups.
Yeah.
and as recently as I think a few weeks ago, signed on to a brief saying that he opposes restrictions on abortion. Mm-hmm. So it's very unlikely that he is going to provide a robust defense for those laws.
Yeah, this is the same attorney general who signed up Minnesota as one of the states fighting the Little Sisters of the Poor. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's like super low. I mean, all these sisters want to do is they just want to help the poorest of the poor. And our attorney general in Minnesota, is fighting them. And as you know, they've been to the state Supreme Court a couple of times. And yeah. To me, it's just, you know, we have, especially in Minnesota, we've had all these riots, we've got all these other problems, and we're going after a group of nuns that want to help the elderly.
Yeah, that case in itself is insane because the sisters don't want birth control as part of their health insurance. They don't need birth control as part of their health insurance. None of their employees have ever asked for birth control as part of their health coverage.
And specifically, it's the abortifacients that,
right.
That's the main reason they're doing this, is because
yes.
There is some types of birth controls that will take the life of the
yes.
new human being.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then just even with oral contraception, for example, we filed a brief on behalf of the Little Sister, or behalf of their position, on behalf of a breast cancer group that shows that there is a causal link between oral contraception and breast cancer,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and various kinds of cancer. And the WHO has actually, the World Health Organization, considers those types of oral contraceptions to be class one carcinogens. I mean, we're not, so in addition to the philosophical and the moral implications here, there are also physical implications of forcing people to get coverage for something that is really, really unhealthy for them.
Yeah, and it's morally, it's against their religion. You know, I mean, he shouldn't, our state attorney general and others, I know California is one of them as well,
yeah.
they're trying to force people to go against their religious beliefs. And our country was founded on religious freedom, right?
Yeah, well, and they can't imagine that somebody would not choose to be promiscuous or not to, it's something, there is such a disconnect and such a, just really a falling away, tragically, from the faith.
But even if they're, to me, I feel that, even if you're an atheist, you're secular, just let them be, let them
right.
do what they want to do. They're not hurting anybody, if that's what they want.
Yeah, but if you feel that your position is right, and then it becomes a crusade, and you have mm-hmm. to make everybody complicit in your immorality. I mean, I don't know really how else to say it.
I have a quote from Abraham Lincoln, and this was during the battle for slavery, and mm-hmm. and he said something to the effect that, we will never agree until we call what they say. What we say is wrong, they want us to say is right.
Yes.
And that's the exact same thing today.
Yep. Yeah, very true. Yeah.
So what happens with this Minnesota case? It's in the courts right now, and eventually it could go to the state or the U.S. Supreme Court, right?
It could.
State, and then maybe.
Yes, it could, and it probably will. So, and I just want to kind of clarify our involvement. So mm-hmm. Life Legal right now is representing the Minnesota State Senate. And what we are trying to do, we are seeking to intervene in the lawsuit mm-hmm. because for the reasons I mentioned before,
right.
we don't believe that Attorney General Ellison is going to mm-hmm. Provide a good defense of the existing laws. And then I want to just back up a little bit, too, and say one of the other justifications, bizarre justifications, for this lawsuit by Gender Justice is that they believe that that society now looks at pregnancy differently because now it is widely believed that it's not just women who become pregnant or not just people who identify as women who become pregnant, which is just the most bizarre justification for changing laws I have ever heard.
So, but the thing is, even, let's say that's what they want to believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why take an innocent human life, you know.
Right.
I mean, if you want to believe that, okay, believe that. But let other people who don't want to, you know, pay for abortions with their tax dollars and just want information, right?
Right.
So if you believe that, okay, but don't take information so people can make an informed decision. And that's what they're doing.
That is what they're doing. I mean, it is... It is a radical departure from anything that we've seen. I mean, these laws are, they've been tried in the courts. They've been tested. They've been around in some cases for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the laws that they want to undo has to do with the dignified and humane disposal of babies who are aborted. Mm-hmm. I don't really think that many people disagree on that. Mm-hmm. And yet that's something that they feel needs to be undone, that it's, you know, we need to just throw human being in incinerators. I mean, we've been there before, and we know what that, you know, I mean, we have to be very careful when we start advocating for...
So how do they argue against just giving a woman information, right? I mean, why is that so troubling for this group? I mean, I can't understand.
I don't know. I wish I could understand your question, but honestly, I don't really want to crawl in the head of somebody who believes that women should not have information and women should not sign, give informed consent to procedures that carry a certain amount of risk. Certainly, I think a great deal of psychological risk, a great deal of emotional risk, in addition to certainly a certain degree of physical risk. And then a procedure that that nobody would disagree takes the life of another human being. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how can you not view that as something that at the very least, requires somebody to, you know, put an X on the line?
I've interviewed a few women who've, you know, had an abortion and wish they would have known more, you know, and fortunately they know that they can be forgiven and, you know, but it's just...
It's just tragic because then it's too late. You can never... And that's the thing with abortion. Abortion is not like any other procedure. And I mean, when you really think about it, what kind of a nation are we that allows something so barbaric that we would say it's okay for mothers to pay somebody to kill their babies? I mean...
No, it's hard to understand. To kind of wrap things up on this, and I know it's a long process, so, you know, do you think in 2 years it would be at the U.S. Supreme Court or... You know, it's working its way there.
Yeah,
just curious.
It's hard to say, especially right now because with COVID, there are, you know, there are delays in courts all across the country.
Right.
So you have that factor in addition to just the unpredictability of timing when it comes to a case like this. So I can't really say if, God forbid, I mean, if we can't intervene. And then if the Attorney General does not do a good job defending the statutes and those, they are struck down, which again, God forbid, but if that happens, there will definitely be
an appeal. Right.
And then hopefully it will be, you know, but it again, this could very easily end up at the Supreme Court. How long that's going to take, I don't know.
Oh, I know. I was just curious.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And I do, obviously, we hope that... that we have Amy Coney Barrett on the court when that happens. So,
At this taping, it looks like that's the case.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about some positive things that your group has helped with here in Minnesota. There was a case of a woman at a hospital here in the Twin Cities, and because I'm involved with Life Legal Minnesota, I'm the only non-attorney, but I kind of like your founder. I helped, you know, get this group together. And I spoke to this elder, I don't know exactly how old she was, but her daughter, she was older, but I spoke with her daughter, and her daughter said that her mother was told that on Monday, you know, the doctor's going to end her sustaining support, and the mother did not want to die, and it would have resulted in her dying, the physician told this woman's mother that there's nothing she could do about it. And fortunately, you know, you sent out an email or a Twitter, I'm not sure what you did, but the hospital got all these calls, and guess what? It changed, you know, and so it literally helped save that woman's life.
And this is something that a lot of people don't know about kind of the other side of pro-life legal work, mm-hmm. that we handle a lot of cases involving the denial of life-sustaining care. Mm-hmm. And this happens with unbelievable frequency, especially when somebody is not adequately insured, and typically that means they have Medicaid. So you mm-hmm. have tens of millions of people across the country who have a card that says they have insurance, but they don't actually have access to health care, and those patients are the first to be taken off of treatment. And we're not just talking about patients on ventilators. A lot of times we're talking about patients being denied food and water,
right.
which is a basic human right. I mean, there's no justification except sometimes at the very end of a certain type of illness that would where you can no longer assimilate food and water. But that's not what we're talking about. Right. We're talking about patients like this woman who can, you know, who need to be fed through a tube and need to get fluids through a tube, but who can assimilate those, who enjoy their lives, who have sometimes
and
they
and
have
she
certain
said,
yeah,
I
want to live.
She
I on a video, I want to live.
Yeah, I want to live, yeah. And it's not always the elderly either. We had a call, again, Life Legal Minnesota, a young man, relatively, I think he was in his 20s maybe,
yeah.
and in a motorcycle accident, and they wanted to, again, end his life-sustaining treatment, and his friend got involved, and then we got involved, and now he you know, is walking, and I saw a video not that long ago that he's, you know, recovering.
Yeah, and these cases are not that few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this idea about taking away somebody's food and water, usually they take away their food and not their water, so they don't want to dehydrate them because mm-hmm. A lot of these cases do involve young patients, so patients in their 20s and 30s who mm-hmm. are organ donors or potential organ donors.
Yeah.
And that's the reality. I mean, and I'm not opposed to organ donation as a
right.
matter of principle,
yeah.
but
yeah.
I think very few people know the procedure by which the organs are harvested.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the case with this young man. And then there was another very similar case where a young man was actually declared brain dead and was being wheeled into the room to have his organs harvested. And his cousin happened to be a nurse and was asked for permission to be in the room when his life support was shut off.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought, well, I'm gonna try one more thing, I have to. He said,
yeah.
he just doesn't look dead to
right.
me.
Yeah.
So he took out his pocket knife and he ran his blade against the young man's heel.
Right.
And the young man flinched.
Oh, wow.
Which you would say that should be enough. However,
yeah.
one of the nurses in the room, one of the other nurses said, oh, that's just a reflex. That doesn't mean anything.
Oh,
oh my
wow.
gosh. So what he did was he did it again on his hand, or he jammed something under his fingernails, and then he flinched again, and then everybody at that point said, wait a minute,
we've
got to see what's going on here. And that young man is walking around
living
with the death certificate. I mean, we have not, as a culture, really taken a look at what's happening in our medical systems, and even with our doctors, and I'm very grateful for doctors. I'm very appreciative
of some very good ones,
healthcare.
Some not so good.
But you also have this prevailing utilitarianism that is rampant in our culture and then, of course, in our medical schools also, that if somebody does not possess a requisite quality of life that is determined by a third person that doesn't know that individual or their family or their beliefs, then they don't deserve to live. And that's problematic. So the same kind of things about wanted people and unwanted people that drive abortion are now also driving euthanasia in our medical system as a whole.
I think a lot of people don't realize back in 1973 when Roe v. Wade and Doe versus Bolton, you know, became the law, which just was a dramatic change for the whole country. But because of Doe versus Bolton, literally a woman, and even now in states, you can have an abortion right up to birth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, in many states. Yeah. Minnesota is a little bit different. They require, which is good, but again, something that that gender Some justice wants to get rid of, a provision where if it, you can't have a late term abortion in the third trimester, let's say, without there being some true medical justification. And then you also have to have another physician there so that if the baby is born alive during the abortion, that baby also gets medical care.
Yeah. I encourage anybody who, you know, is watching this. I had an opportunity to interview Melissa Oden, who survived a late term abortion, and her story is just incredible. I mean, it's just... And there's other survivors, and you know, these groups that are trying to promote abortion, when they see an abortion survivor, we have Melody Olson I interviewed locally, and Gianna Jensen. So it's like, how can you say that that human being you're looking at, you know, was not a human being,
you
know,
earlier?
I don't
know how you, I don't know how you make all that fit in your, in your brain. I really don't. The kind of mental gymnastics that you have to go through to reconcile that this is an actual living, grown human being that lived a lived her life, and somehow you're going to say that she should have been killed? I mean, and at what point? How do you not then, using that kind of reasoning, justify full-on infanticide, which we're actually seeing now people do, infanticide, and you see people like Dr. Peter Singer, who has an endowed chair at Princeton, so I mean, we're talking about somebody of considerable influence, saying that it's okay to kill toddlers and young children who are disabled if their parents no longer want them. I mean, God have mercy on us.
But yet Singer, I remember reading years ago, like his mother had some health problems or something, but he didn't want to do anything, you know, for somebody he's connected to.
Well, it's their choice, but, you know, I mean...
Well, and it's not—it's not people's choice in a lot of countries, you know, like in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. I mean, they literally are euthanizing young children, you know. Unfortunately, we're almost out of time, so if you could give us your website and just a closing comment.
Sure. Our website is LLDF for Life Legal Defense Foundation.org. And we're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all of those social media platforms. And then just as a final word, I just, first of all, I'm so grateful for you, for everything that you've done here in Minnesota, for your partnership with Life Legal has been tremendous. And for your audience, just to really Please don't be quiet about these issues that involve life and death. Whether it's abortion, whether it's denial of life-sustaining care, all these issues go to the question of who is a person, who is a human being, and who is deserving of protection. Please don't be silent about those things. Share what you know with other people. That's really the only way that we're going to change this. Laws may change for good or for bad, but really, we need to reach people, and that typically happens really one-on-one.
Absolutely, so. Thanks so much for being with us, Alexandra.
Thank you, Russ.
All right. We'll be back again with the Rooney Report.